12. And I was really searching for some spiritual direction. I didn't have any. I didn't have any concept of God. I didn't believe or not believe. I just didn't know anything. And I met him, and that's probably the person that's made the most impact on my life. And now I call him my sponsor. And so he's still making an impact on my life. I'd like to introduce Jim Willis.
Yay, Jim.
My name is Jim Willis, and I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Jim. Hey, Jim.
And by the grace of God, I'm following this program to the best of my ability, and sometimes just doing it. I hadn't found it necessary to take the drunk since February the 6th, 1957. So, in about 64 days, the Lord willing and the creek don't rise, and I'll be celebrating my 60th. Here in this program. That astounds me because I never thought I'd live over 40, drunk or sober. I usually ask the higher power for directions, and this morning I even done an extra meditation. And I've also asked him since then, and there's been no reply. I just want you to know that I'm going to keep talking until he shows up, and then we'll all get something out of it. But when you kill me, you'll have to put up with whatever. There are a number of things that I want to say. I am so grateful for the people that allowed me to share their life with them all these years. And that in itself is a tremendous gift that I don't know of any place else I could have ever found. I also like to thank my present wife. I've introduced her to my present wife to keep her on her toes. Actually, we've been together 54 years, or just about. And what I do, like in October, was we lived together for four years, and then we've been married since then. And what I do on our anniversary, which is in October, is I, like this year, in October, I got 49 red roses and 4 white roses. And I was explaining to a lady that was putting the vase together last year why I was doing it. I felt compelled I should tell her. Besides, I was kind of proud of it. So anyway, she said, you were living in sin for those 4 years. And I said, I thought it was heavenly. The thing, there are a number of reasons, of course, some of y'all know her, and the reason I am so grateful for her. So when we first started going together, she was asking me when would we have more time to spend together, and I told her then that AA would always have to come first, because if it didn't, she wouldn't like what she was getting anyway. And she has been more than willing to carry that out. She never complains about anything I do, and I spend, I'm with alcoholics 7 days a week. That's pretty sick if you want to know what I think about it. But anyway, I do, and I keep an office. I'm going to go into that a little more later, but anyway, to share this program with people, I do that 5 days a week. She never complains about the time or the money or anything else. So I'm indeed so deeply grateful to her for carrying that out. There's another thing I would like to mention, that when I was new in the program, I knew that if I was ever going to be able to really be a real part of everything, that I was going to have to learn to talk before more than one person, you know, myself in the mirror sort of thing. And so anyway, I had a chance one night, by the way, Group 12 has been my home group ever since I came into AA. And so we had a regular meeting that night where neither the chairman nor the speaker showed up. So I had a chance to make my AA talk. I made the best talk they'd ever heard. Now, the reason I said that, because after I had made my talk, three guys came up to me after the meeting, and they told me that was the best talk, AA talk, they'd ever heard. So I wanted to give them another hour or so of it, so I got them off to the side, and I was saying, I don't know the exact word, but what was it that, you know, turns you on, or whatever I would have said. And they started telling me things that I never thought of, I never heard of, I never dreamt of. And the more they talked, the more depressed I got, because I finally made a good AA talk and they didn't hear one word that I said. So the reason I like to tell that anytime I speak is it kind of puts it in perspective. You're not going to hear what I say. You're going to hear what you think I said. Mm-hmm. Now, I hope it's good. If it isn't, I think you need to talk to your sponsor. For God's sakes, don't come up and tell me how much you're displeased. And, you know, some way or another, I'm going to Alcoholic Anonymous darkness or something. You know, for saying the things that I say. Another thing that I'd like to say is that I repeat this to others every day, to somebody, and I need to hear it for myself out loud. So I know that I didn't create myself. I know that I really don't maintain myself in this life. I know that the food that I ate today is now being changed into flesh and bones and energy and thoughts. Everything that we call life is going on inside of each one of us. It doesn't matter who we are, what we've ever done or not done. That infinite intelligence is within each one of us always. You know. And to me, that I remind myself, being how I know that's an absolute truth, and I have experienced that in my life, why is it that I don't live it 24/7? And that's one of the reasons I have to remind myself about it, and telling others works for me. So the idea is like my affirmation I say every day, that I'm dedicated, I'm devoted, and I'm committed to do and to be God's love and God's will 24/7. I'm okay until I put the 24/7 on. And then, you know, I can fall back and say, well, we're not saints. The point is we're willing to grow along spiritual lines. But why do you think Bill had to put that statement in there? Because this is bad. But most of us want to be a saint. We just don't know what that means, you know what I mean? So anyway, if I start levitating up here this morning, you're going to know that the higher power has showed up. And until then, best of luck to you. But it's amazing, you know, when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I would have settled for a fish and a little piece of bread, the way things were going. I would have settled just for not being asked to leave, which I had been asked to leave. And after living this program for a while, I've become a fisherman and a baker. And I've met a great many fishermen and bakers throughout the years. And what is it makes that possible is nothing but the grace of God. And that's something else I would like to mention, because I repeat it often, is, you know, we have a lot of wonderful information that we can use to help us apply this program in our life. But there's only one that can take a defect like alcoholism and transform it into an asset. Humans can't do that. Now, one of the things that I've used over the years is I know you'll find this difficult, but I've had other defects that got in the way of my life, if not as much, almost as much as my drinking did. Violence, jealousy. I used the drug of guilt and punishment on everybody. So the idea is by bearing this problem and trusting this higher power to do for me what I cannot do for myself, those worst defects, to some degree, have been transformed into an asset. Isn't that amazing how many, when you think about the things that a lot of us have done, and yet it can be transformed to where it's something useful, you know, and we don't have to pay back all the things that we did. If I had to pay back all the things I did, I'd never get caught up, you know. And the idea is when God transforms these into an asset, then there's something that we can use forever, really. And it becomes such a big part of our lives, and certainly a big part of my life, that I've been willing to spend a great deal of my life trying to live this program to the best of my ability. I've had so many miracles in my life that it's very difficult to even imagine, for me to imagine. You know, when I came in here, I was bankrupt, illiterate used car dealer. Now, I don't want to hear anybody groaning about that. Some people have bad opinion about used car dealers. But at any rate, I say that I didn't have an inferiority complex. I was truly inferior. And everything in my life was not working well. And February the 6th, 1957, I had run away from home. My then wife was not treating me in a manner I wanted to become accustomed to. And I had done like many of you. I graduated to pints and half pints. I'll just get a pint, that's all I'll do. And then, of course, we renew that during the day. But when I really needed to stop feeling and stop thinking, then I would get a fifth to go along with that little companion. And what happened to me is something that's one of the most horrible things I think can happen to an active alcoholic is alcohol quit working. Always before, the reason I loved alcohol, that if I drank enough, I didn't cure. I'd either pass out or I didn't cure. Nobody loves you. I don't cure. You're going to die. I don't cure. You broke. I don't cure. You know. And what happened on February the 6th, I couldn't pass out. I had stayed up all night drinking. And that was extra depressive because I was in a what would be called probably a $3 motel, and the walls were really thin, and this young couple were in the next room making love and lying to each other all night. And I'm not able to pass out by the time of that kind of double penalty. So at any rate, what happened though is I remembered something my family doctor had said. He had called me sometime before that, and he told me, I don't want you as a patient anymore. I don't care if you're in the emergency room. Do not tell them that I'm your doctor, because I'm not. And the only way that I will ever consider you as a patient again is you're going to have to get serious about stop drinking forever, or I want nothing to do with you, and hung up. And I remembered that, and I don't know how you were when you hit your bottom, but those four horsemen were galloping around the room, and things were in pretty bad shape, mentally, physically, emotionally, socially, whatever. So I called his office, and he wasn't there, but his nurse was, and I said, well, I'll call him back tomorrow. And she said, no, he said, if you ever call, I know what to do. And so she got me a room in the St. Benedict's Nursing Home, which was the only, there's only two places in town. There wasn't any of the hospital, but in two places, that was a nursing home that would take you, knowing you were an alcoholic. And even then, they put on my chart, nervous breakdown. And I assure you, everybody around me was having a nervous breakdown. I didn't have a nervous breakdown until I couldn't pass out, and then things got a little rough, you know what I mean? But at any rate, what had happened is this AA member from California had come in, and he had the flu, and somebody, he came over to the old club, and they sent him, somebody knew Dr. Nixon, he had a, this guy, the AA member had flu or something. And so he goes and sees Dr. Nixon, and he tells him, I have to be very careful about the drugs I take because I'm an alcoholic, and it could set up a craving to drink again. And when he said that, then Dr. Nixon told him that he had a drunk. He didn't call me an alcoholic. I wish he would. Wouldn't that have been nice instead of being a lousy drunk and the other names that were called? Alcoholics sound pretty good to me, but anyway. And they talked for hours, and he lent Dr. Nixon his big book, and Dr. Nixon read it, and that's when he had called me, because he said, I've got something, I believe will work, but you have to want it, and you haven't, whatever he said. Anyway, I didn't qualify at first. So what happened is they gave us paraldehyde. I don't know if anybody ever been around anybody take paraldehyde. Not formaldehyde, but paraldehyde. That'll come later. But you smell like a wet chicken. Now, I don't know if anybody had dipped a chicken pick it, but they stink something terrible, you know. So anyway, he came in, and I'm going to stop right there a little bit, and I want to go back and qualify. You know, one of the things about Alcoholics Anonymous, I had preferred to tell you nothing about but the miracles and all the wonderful things that has happened to me as a result of living this program and the way that I live this program, and I certainly hope to share some of that with you. But the wisdom of our program tells us that we need to say what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And the reason for that is so simple, that there is no way I could possibly really be as grateful for the transformations that have happened in my life than I am, nor all the ones that I've seen and people that I've had the pleasure of working with over the years and displeasure to work with over the years, is when you see this power doing for us what we can do for ourselves. But the idea is what I'm going to tell you, you're going to have a hard time believing that I'm this sweet, loving guy that I am today. Apparently, I hadn't convinced you yet. But when I was 13 years old, we lived on Quincy Street in San Antonio, and Pearlberry trucks used to pass by, and several had paper routes that had canvas bags on the back with a bicycle, and one of us would get on the truck, and we'd throw that beer into the canvas bag, and then we'd go under a house, and the houses were built off the ground for some reason, and we would smoke cedar bark wrapped in newspaper and drink hot beer. Now, I know that people say, but the first beer or first alcohol they drank, you know, they had that wonderful awakening. But I was in more jeopardy with the cedar bark in the newspaper, because if you took too big a puff, the newspaper would catch on fire, and you would suck the fire down your throat. So, at any rate, I told that story for so many years about stealing beer off of Pearl Berry and never making amends. And one day I was making a talk a few years ago, and I realized I never had made amends. So I wrote him a check, what I think the present worth of money is, and what I thought might be, and sent him a check. So I want you to know I've made amends to Pearl Berry. So what happened is I was very passive, though, as I really didn't like hanging out with people. I didn't trust people. I loved animals and any kind of creatures, but I really didn't care much for people. I didn't have at least one person I hang out with. So what happened was I wouldn't fight. I was very passive. I remember this guy hit me one time, and I held him down and wouldn't hit him back, and everybody's hounding for me to hit him, and I wouldn't do it. But then we moved out in the country when I was about 14, and there was a beer joint down the road about a mile, and there was no TV or anything in those days, so the family would go to bed early, and when they did, I'd go out, go up to the beer joint. And if I had 15 cents to get a beer, it didn't make any difference how old it was. And if I had a quarter, I could get two beers, you know. Or if I just be patient, which was difficult at the time, but they didn't have any indoor plumbing. So when the old man went out the back to relieve himself, we relieved him of his beer and his money. And fast forward on that too, I want you to know that I accidentally made amends to him. I went out there after I'd become a car dealer. I was the youngest dealer in San Antonio for a while. I'll tell you about that reason I was a car dealer, because my dad fired me, but I don't want y'all to feel sorry for me for my dad firing me. But anyway, I was out there showing off because I was now a car dealer, and drinking a little bit. And apparently I drank too much, and the old man wanted to borrow some money. You know, I keep saying old man, but I'm 86 years old, and he was probably 50. You know? So anyway, he was older. So he wanted to borrow some money on the beer joint, and I told him, why don't you just let me buy it? So he said, okay, and he sold it to me. And Sunday morning, I woke up, and I thought, I did something, but I'm not sure what it was. It had something to do with Guavito at the beer joint. So I went and asked him, and he said, yes, you bought it last night. So anyway, I tried to back out, and he wouldn't let me. So I ended up owning the beer joint, and had a guy go out there and run it. We managed to lose a license selling to minors within 3 months, and my mother had been trying to shut him down for that for several years, but we managed to do it with no effort at all. So anyway, what happened is some guys come out to play pool, and there was a gang leader, his name was Chicote, and he picked up, I'll never forget, the six ball, and he said, we don't want any bolillos out here. And I asked him to put the ball down, and he didn't. And all the rage that I had pent up, just, I exploded. And I went to beating him and beating him and beating him until I worn out. And when I went back into the beer joint, the real gang leader was named Prieto, and I told him, I guess we're going to have some trouble. He said, nah. He said, a guy's too cocky. He needs somebody straight. So what I found out for the first time, no matter how small I was or insignificant I was, that I could punish people that had hurt me or taken advantage of me. And I started a road on violence that turned out to be very serious. My brother that I was so jealous of, because I was an embarrassment to my family. You know, here I'm illiterate, becoming violent, pretty much antisocial, you know, and here I have a brother that everybody loves to get along with. And I say that my family loved my brother more than they loved me. Now, I know you hear that a lot, but in my case, it's true. And I would say this, if you had known him, you'd have loved him more also. So anyway, my dad bought a truck to haul some hay and stuff for the summer, and I stuck a hay hook through his leg and tried to make it look like it was an accident. Then I beat him up a couple times. He was my older brother, and he beat me up. And then of all the foolish things, my family gave me a shotgun for my 15th birthday, and I tried to shoot him with that. So it was very difficult to make out like this is all accidental stuff, you know. And it got worse. I got actually, my dad's father murdered a man over jealousy. That's where I caught the jealousy gene, by the way, is from my grandfather, probably the violence too. In fact, I was thinking this morning, I had a chance to, around 50 years ago, the penitentiary started letting us take in AA meetings. And so we took AA meetings into the main unit there at Huntsville, where my granddad had spent a little bit of time, you know. And then my mother's father also had some problems like that. So at any rate, I couldn't hardly wait to get away from home. I graduated from school, high school, could not read, and still they just pass you on, you know. And I always wanted to be a hero. When I was 6 years old, my sister made me a cape. I was going to be Batman, and I jumped off the roof, and I didn't fly. And so it kind of ruined that illusion for a while. But anyway, it looks like we was going to go to war with Russia or China. And so I joined the Marine Corps. I went and signed up. And the reason I didn't have to take a test, because I had a high school graduation certificate. And they were desperate, apparently, for people. And so I forged my mom and dad's signature because I was 17, or had somebody do it. And then there was a dealer next door to my dad. His name was Herbert, but he put on the thing George Armand real fancy and put the notary seal on it, and they accepted me in the Marine Corps. And I went home and told my mom and dad I was going in the Marine Corps, and they said, well, we're not going to do anything to get you in trouble. And so we're not going to say anything. They were wanting me out of town as much as I did. I was in the Marine Corps about 30 minutes when I realized I'd made a bad mistake. Went through 14 weeks of no drinking, no liberty, no nothing, you know. I went in, weighed 120 pounds, and come out weighing 155 pounds, you know, and I was in good shape. And I looked good in a dress blue, so I'm going to tell you that. So, anyway, I say that by the time I was 19, I'd already been hospitalized twice for alcoholism. Once was I started passing blood And they put me in an old man's ward in the Navy hospital. The Marines don't have hospitals. And the other time was is I came to in somebody's garage naked in the winter, and I got pneumonia. And I say that's alcohol related because I rarely lay down in anybody's garage naked in the winter. So anyway, by the time I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was really, really beat down. When I came over to the Group 12, the first night there was a guy named Ted, and he could talk this program in ways that I swear it was so funny. I can't remember ever laughing, a genuine laugh like I did after, you know, when I was listening to Ted telling about alcoholism and talking about us. And it was so good. So I hadn't been checked out of the nursing home yet, so the guy was taking me back to the nursing home, and I couldn't stop laughing. And he said, you know, you may be one of these honeymooners. And I said, what is that? He said, well, you may be one of these people that never have to drink again. And I said, well, wait till the family hears that. I told him what I had. When I said that, I told him what I had, I want to tell you about something that was really a puzzle to me for a long time. But when I was 15 years old, I was feeling very sorry for myself. And I had two realizations that later started making a lot of sense to me. One of them is I knew that I was more loving than I was living. I knew, though, that I would never have anybody that would let me love them with the love that I had. Now, I don't know if I'd already accepted the idea that nobody was going to love me to that extent, but what was puzzling until I came into AA, and here we have an opportunity to really express the love we have 24/7, if we want to. You know? And the other thing was, is I knew that I was of more value than I was able to prove at the time. And those two things become very important when I started working workshops and doing that sort of stuff and doing workbooks and stuff. When I done the asset list, I would put on those things three spiritual gifts that we received. One was that awakening to a higher power. And number two is we're not experiencing the love that we are. And the thing is, if you look at the other, of course, is we're not being valued for the individual that we are. And if you look, if you take any resentment you have, and I'll bet you anything that one or both of those things are involved. So at any rate, after I come in and come over to the group, and they took me in, there was a little quick group that absolutely loved AA, and there wasn't, I mean, AA was so small then, and the thing is like, there's many opportunities for service nowadays, or rather, working with newcomers nowadays, that we would have to go drum them up many times, and I was still a used car dealer, and telephones were a nickel, so I would go around to all the dealerships before their sales meeting, and I knew some of them would be hurting very bad, you know what I mean? Painful with trying to sober up early in the morning. So anyway, I would give them a nickel, and I would tell them, now you call me when you get ready to sober up. Now, my car lot was right across the street from Broadway Bowling Alley, and so this guy named Ed was coming out there one night, and I knew the next morning even the tips of his hair was going to be hurting, you know what I mean? So I had already approached Ed before, and let me see if I'm going over time. So anyway, Ed told me, for God's sakes, will you leave me alone? And I promise you, if I go into that AA thing, I'll let you make the commission. But I want you to let me alone. I don't know. We say resentment is our number one offender, right? Well, I looked up one time, and here comes Ed. He went over to Sahara Cup and sobered up, and did not tell him that I was the one that made the initial contact. I did not get credit for that. And I hate to say it, but I had to do a radical forgiveness on Ed later on. But what happened was that my life began to change in such a way that I never imagined could possibly change. You know, I began to live this program to the best of my ability, and things began to turn around. Some of the things, the miracles I'm going to tell you, I should have said this because I know it's true. I had so many miracles before I ever come into AA. I had no business to be alive today. I mean, some of the things that I did and some of the things I should be either passed out of this world, or I certainly should have been locked up for it. But at any rate, what happened is, as I began to practice this program every possible way that I could, and I began to have some transformations. I had mentioned to you that I was bankrupt, and I went to work. Well, I kept my car lot open until I learned how to read a little bit. And then there was a dealership that wanted me to work for them, and I went to work for them. And I didn't work for them long. They didn't pay me enough, so I quit. And then went with my brother, who had a dealership. And he was bringing Volkswagens out of Germany. At the time, there was a six-month waiting list, and we had a beautiful showroom floor and all this stuff. And he was in love with this girl over in Germany, so he gave me the dealership. And I walked around for 2 weeks saying, look what God has given me. I mean, look at this. You know, I was overwhelmed with gratitude. The problem is I didn't try to get any floor plan. I didn't do anything that would take to run a business. I'm just sitting around saying, God, look at me. So he came in and he said, Jim, you'll have to find something else. I sold a dealership last night. There was a member of AA that heard back that same day, and he come and offered me a chance to go start a rental and leasing company and get a piece of it. I worked for him for 6 months, and he fired me for non-productivity. So at any rate, I went whining to my dad, and he was in the wholesale car business at the time, and he told me, well, come down here, your brother's overseas. And so I did, and it wasn't long until he more or less fired me. I went out of town, and he sold all my cars for what they bring at the auction. That's kind of firing, right? So anyway, I went down to pick up some titles from the company I had worked for before, some cars I bought, and the owner saw me and visited a while, and come to find out he had went out to the 4th Army and bid on a lease and rental contract for the road cars for the 4th Army and didn't know what he had, and he was looking for a rental and leasing expert. Now, I didn't tell him I was an expert, but he knew that I had been working at a lease, you know, starting up a leasing company. So they hired me, and they made me too good a deal. I stayed there for 15 years. Now, the money I saved up, I was able, my brother had started franchise for Texas and Oklahoma, and he offered to let me buy into the company, which I did, and I went on to chief of operations there. And I had the most loving relationship with him. That's a brother that I had, you know, stuck a hay hook through and tried to shoot. And he had never held anything against me. And he took me and let me buy into that company at book value. And I was able, he passed away about 6.5 years later. And I was, it's a long story, but I sold my interest in it. And I was able to do, that was 1981. So that's 35 years ago. And I sold my interest for enough money where I don't have to work. And I was, it was an answer to one of my prayers. We used to have a guy in the program that his family gave him an apartment house and a ranch later on. And so he could just do AA and not, he wouldn't stay sober. And I reminded God of that, that, you know, if he would give it to me, then not only, I'm a worker, I'm an AA worker, you know. And I convinced God in doing that, apparently, because he gave me the opportunity where I was able 35 years ago to keep an office and do workshops and do all sorts of things. That's a miracle. I mean, here, a bankrupt, illiterate person. Not only the illiterate change, though, because, but I've written about 20 workbooks and 20 workshops, you know, and that's only by the grace of God that any of that happened. You know, I hate to tell about some of these things because it gives the appearance that some way or another, alone and unaided, I've done some of this. And I promise you, it's all been by God's grace. I do show up. I am a worker. But I know the only source I have of everything is this, is I choose to call him our Father. So, at any rate, I've been able to not have to earn the money other ways or be paid anything. In 2008, Daniel was changing the server on my website, which I had downloaded, where you can download the workbooks and workshops. And at that time, I already had 8,300,000 hits, and I had downloaded 330,000 in 46 countries. That, by the grace of God, from an illiterate person. Now, I'm not saying they're well-written. I'm just saying they're written. And I've written those things and do those things out of a deep love for this program. And I believe this higher power wants us to do something with ourselves. And here we are. I suggest sometimes go out to one of these nursing homes and people are standing around waiting to die. It's a sad, sad place to be. But if you and I want to make a difference today, we can. We can do it 24 hours a day. I mean, you can come over here to Group 12 and most any time of the day and you'll find somebody sicker than you are, you know. And you can act like you're well that day. You can buy them a cup of coffee, you know, and talk a little program with them. And the next thing you know, things change. And the idea is you and I can do something about it. I mentioned earlier about the violence. At 6.5 years, I was almost levitating, and I say that sarcastically, but the truth of the matter is I really did have a good program going. I have been having a lot of spiritual experiences that were very genuine, but I had not handled one thing. I stuffed one thing that was too painful to look at, You know, we say we beg you from the very start to be fearless and thorough. I'm saying if you don't want a problem some down the road, if we don't deal with these things, they're going to deal with us at some point. And at some point, I committed an act of violence that I promised myself I was never going to do anything like that again. And I did. And I went into a horrible depression after that. The good thing about it was that I had learned from my friends early in AA is when you're having trouble, you don't withhold and withdraw. You involve yourself more and more, which I did. And we started a group there. We started an 11-step meeting, a group, because a lot of us felt like we wanted to talk more about spiritual things than we was talking about in a regular meeting. But at any rate, what happened, though, is I was so frightened that I was going to flip out once again and I might kill somebody or I might harm somebody, particularly another AA. Now, that's going to mess up my spiritual standing in the group, right? So what I would do, you have never seen a person make amends faster or to work the steps faster, or I would do something as soon as I realized that I had, was resentful to someone or said something ugly to someone or whatever. And I have written a workbook. It's a 40-day workbook where you use the big book and the 12 and 12 and go through the steps. And the first time I had written that, I had always worked on myself. And something changed everything about 2 weeks after I'd finished that. I began to have some awakenings and some realizations. And one of them was very simple. Once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. I don't have any doubts about that at all. Do you? I mean, if you do, watch around, you'll see some people, even with good sobriety, sometimes they'll go out and get drunk and they try to experiment a little and it doesn't work. So I have no qualms with that. The idea is the jealousy. I had gone through such insane things about jealousy, and I had turned it once a jealous person, always a jealous person. Just a quick one on that one. When I was sobering up, when my then wife was reading the big book to me, we got to the family. Some of the wives had retaliatory affairs. I said, "They ain't knowing this book what you've been doing. Now I want you to tell me what it is. We're gonna get it straightened out. We don't have to have this trouble anymore." To give you an example, I'd say it was like I had promised not to keep alcohol in the house anymore, but I had it in the garage. The garage cut down. But anyway, and I switched the vodka. Anybody would do that. It's pretty sick. But it did look like water. So I was gonna get. I woke up around 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, like we do sometimes. And had to have a little something drink, go back to sleep. So I was in the kitchen, I reached to get a glass, and I looked out back window, and this guy signaling my wife with some kind of Morse code with a light. He was two short and a long. And so I got my pistol, and I started mocking him every time he'd do it. And I was going to get him over in the yard and shoot him as a burglar. So I wasn't in a problem. So anyway, he wouldn't come over, so I learned how to advance infantry training, the Marine Corps, sneak up on people. So I snuck over in his backyard to shoot him, and now I'm going to put him in a wheelbarrow and bring him over to the yard. And it was a light, the wind was blowing the light back and forth. That's the closest I ever got. But back to the violent business. What happened is, I said, once a violent person, always a violent person, like I've had in my other defects. and it changed everything. Because I seen why I was unable to get any relief from the pattern is simply because I was dealing with the effects of it. I wasn't dealing with a condition and cause of it. What does a violent person do? You act out violently. What does an alcoholic do if you don't have a problem? You drink. You know, so the idea is once a violent person, always a violent person, and that changed everything completely. We don't have time to go into a lot of real good stuff. I just want to tell you that I am so deeply grateful to this higher power and to you folks and to AA. And the thing I say many times, you know, if I would ask more of God and more of the program and more of myself sooner if I had realized it. Thank you.